Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This podcast is a proud member of the FanHub 100. Football without fans is nothing, so we've partnered with FanHub to put fans first. Search FanHub app to play your part in the journey.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 73 of the Unholy Trinity podcast in partnership with FanHub, where the fans come first. And we're back for the final show of the year, what's been a shocking year in many aspects. We'll try and keep it as lighthearted and as upbeat as we can, as always. Delighted to say we've been joined by, once again, I think you've got the record number of appearances on this show, Andy. Now you've got at least two hat-trick balls if you were doing soccer AM. But Andy McGregor joins us once again. Andy, how's Christmas been for you, mate?
Good, thanks. I like to be the Ted Sagar of the show. It's very nice of you to say. You know, it's a bit of an old reference there. But no, Christmas has been good. Thanks. It's been good to spend time with family in this, as you say, collectively, you know, blighted year.
Certainly, mate, certainly. But it's great to have you on once again to see this year out and hopefully look forward to a bit more upbeat year outside of football. That's for sure. But we're going to, the last time that we all spoke, we all got together, it was obviously after the Arsenal game before the Man United Carabao Cup quarter final, and obviously Sheffield United in the league as well. So let's kick things off there if we can do. Pete, I'll come to yourself first. Man United quarter-final, massively disappointing.
Yeah, weird game, wasn't it? Really weird game, incredibly slow start. It was like it almost took us 40 minutes to sort of get going in the game. And I think with about 15 gone, I think we were lucky not to be two or three down, because United just seemed to roll on from the Leeds game, loads of intensity, pressing us really hard. He seemed really organised. Probably a lot fresher as well, because he rested a lot of players, didn't he? Or rotated the squad. So, yeah, they had a lot more legs than us. But we seemed really sort of off the pace. It took us a long time to sort of get into their half. It looked like we were playing a lot for set pieces. I think a lot of fans were probably be very disappointed with how we played. But then the longer the game went on, your hope started to get up and you thought, God, you know, we get a set piece here or a Gilfie free kick, could nick it 1-0 or we could go ahead. But as soon as they got the goal, it just seemed like it was a bit of a tall order for us, really. And it was a disappointing way to exit the cup. It's sort of the one that's left for us, isn't it? And the one that, I wouldn't say it's the one we all really want, but I think it's the one that a lot of Evertonians would like to win. And realistically, that and the FA Cups probably are, you know, biggest hope of an achievement this season.
Do you think, Andy, that it was basically down to the fact that, you know, we're running on empty almost? You know, the squad depth isn't what Man United have got at their disposal. So we're playing with, you know, the same group of players week in, week out, and game in, game out. Is it as simple as just saying it was one game too many at the time?
Yeah, I think in hindsight, at the time, you're very disappointed because as Evertonians, we are starved of that success. But I think in hindsight, yeah, and I said this day after the game, we just didn't have enough horses in the race. It was, as you say, Man United can bring that quality level of attacking, you know, off the bench. And we just didn't have that. And we've got a few injuries anyway. It just came at the wrong. It's probably come too, you know, I know people don't like to hear this, probably too soon for us in a way. I know we haven't won a trophy for 25 years, but in this cycle, if you will, we probably just haven't got the squad quite there to manage the games, especially in this really compressed season. So yeah, I think simply it's down to the fact that they could bring on goal scorers and we really couldn't bring on that level of talent. And, you know, some players are playing a lot of games at the moment, and you could see as the performances have gone on, it's become tougher and tougher. We've had to grind and grind. So yeah, it was disappointing, but at the end of the day, I think it's understandable considering the difference in the squad.
And I think it's a game, Lee, isn't it, where you'd like to see 40,000 fans at Goodison Park, you know, trying to roar the team on, especially if, you know, with that same squad, the same players being used game in, game out. We were saying just before we started recording about the importance of, over the course of Christmas, especially in years gone by, the importance of fans and how fans actually impact the game. You know, a couple of thousand were in, nowhere near what we would have on a normal match day. But do you think that on that particular night with 40,000 fans in, maybe that could have given the players an extra 5 or 10% to push on and maybe nick something on the day?
Yeah, potentially could have got us over the line. It's one of those so near but yet so far moments again, wasn't it? It's similar to Leicester last year. And I just felt, I don't know, they made 9 changes. We made 2 outfield changes and that says it all. Andy just alluded to it there. They were able to bring on Rashford and Martial. They brought Van der Beek in from the start. They brought Cavani in from the start. You know, and we unfortunately were bringing on Cenk Tosun to try and do something for us. So that just shows you where we are squad-wise. It's no coincidence that Man City have won it 3 years running. They've probably got the best squad in the league. And it comes down to a squad game, that trophy, really. I think they're unbeaten, aren't they, in 18 matches in the League Cup, which is a phenomenal stat. And it's just a shame because it is probably the most winnable trophy, but at the same time, it's the way it's all fallen for us. We just didn't have the legs, did we? I mean, Pete said it there. We didn't start great. I don't think it was essentially just almost physical fatigue. I think it was just mental fatigue. I mean, Michael Keane had probably the worst 20 minutes he had all season in those first 20 minutes. You know, he even rubbed on to Olsen, didn't it? He almost gave a goal away by miscontrolling it and trying to dummy a player. So, yeah, it's just such a shame. Maybe you're right, Mike. Maybe if we did have a full house, then we might have had that extra sort of adrenaline to sort of maybe put it on them a little bit. But we were just winding down for pens, weren't we? And in all honesty, I don't know what you guys think, but I just thought Cavani should never be on the pitch. I honestly just don't get this VAR from the semi onwards. Like, you either have it in the comp or you don't. You know what I mean? It's as simple. I don't know what you think, Anne.
I think that's to do with the EFL. The team's not having it, and I think that's the EFL because the EFL Cup, obviously, basically they don't expect those teams to be around. So they believe that everyone will be able to do VAR. It's an issue in the FA Cup as well, isn't it? You know, in certain games when you play away, you haven't got the VAR. It's just one of those things at the moment where the game is, but yeah, I think we were massively let down by the referee because he was looking, according to him, he saw the Cavani incident clear sight, didn't he? And obviously Bruno Fernandes is, you know, good a player as he is. He's all, you know, likes a trick, doesn't he, up his sleeve, and he nearly put, you know, really, really hair poor Richarlison. So yeah, a couple of real kick in the teeth moments there. So
I think that's a frustration with, obviously, I mean, the VAR side of things, understandable in terms of the fact that in the area rounds, you know, a lot of the lower league teams haven't got it at the ground. So you understand it. But I think from my side, I think I mentioned it to yourselves the other day, it's almost as if that because the referees now are so used to having that technology at their disposal and they rely on it So they're relying on these cameras to pick up things that maybe they don't see or they see and they're unsure, whatever it might be. There's too much of a reliance on technology now. So when they ask the referee a game without using it, there lies a problem. And, you know, they're almost, the demand is almost now wired a different way. So therefore, it affects them refereeing a game as they would have done, say, 5 years ago. What do you think about that, Lee? Do you think that's...
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think, you know, if the referee's there, for example, told to go, look, we think there's an incident, go and have a look at the screen. In today's football, sends him off there, doesn't he? Sends him off. He's grabbed him around the neck and he's thrown him to the floor. Yeah, okay, Mina's probably made a bit of a meal of it as well because he's a big guy, but at the end of the day, he should be off. And then the Bruno one, if you look at that, you know, more carefully, he knows exactly what he's doing there. I mean, obviously, Harry Kane does that quite often. And obviously, you know, it's very dangerous, isn't it? You know, if the player's in the air and he just gives him that little nudge so he can't even manoeuvre his body, he could have had a serious, serious injury there. I mean, he looked sparked out anyway, didn't he? He looked like he'd just come out of a Canelo fight. I just think, you know, as good as Bruno is, as Andy says, he has got that little bit of snide, and he did it in the first game at Goodison, didn't he, in the league. You know, he left a couple on players there as well, and he is a little snide. I hope when we play him again, someone just goes straight through him, to be honest, just to put one on him. But
we'd love him to play for us, wouldn't we?
Oh, of course he would, yeah, of course he would. But he's a, you know, let's have it right, he's a phenomenal footballer. He's up there with De Bruyne for me in terms of, like, talent. But it was just one of those. It was such a shame the way the game fell. I think if we'd have had a week running up to it and we'd have had a reasonably, you know, sort of fit squad, it would have probably been much more of a game. It was quite a poor game from both sides. After United had that spell, it just kind of went into a bit of nothing, didn't he, the game, really? And then, obviously, Cavani came up with the winner right at the death. Otherwise, it was penalties, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was frustrating. It was frustrating, you know, outside of the refereeing performance, which ultimately, you know, cost us Richarlison for the Boxing Day game. Could have cost us the City game as well, which obviously we'll talk about shortly. But he was certainly concussed. You can see when he got up, he was wobbling all over the place at one point. So, you know, again, these kind of things need to be looked at. You know, they really do. And, you know, players especially, I think Fernandez knows as well that Bailly's coming in. So he knows he's going to be sandwiched with Richarlison. He knows that straight away. And it's dangerous play. So you could argue, again, that could be a second red card and things are different. But certainly for me, you know, one game too many in such a short period of time. And let's not forget, you know, fantastic month that we've had in December. We were all fretting about the opponents and the running that we had. And, you know, we've come out of the month with 13 points from 15 on the table. We've played against, you know, some of the better sides in the league as well. So that's going to take its toll at some point in terms of the performance level. But it's a trophy which we said, like you said before, Pete, which has eluded us now, and it's a trophy that, you know, we wouldn't want to win any kind of trophy, but to complete that set would have been nice. But that's unfortunately us for another year. But I think, and that's what brings me nicely on to Sheffield United, because I think going into that game after playing United on the 23rd to go into Boxing Day and go to Bramall Lane against a side, okay, devoid of confidence, but still a difficult side. You know, they're not one of the worst sides you've seen in the Premier League, although the point at the moment doesn't really reflect that. But it was nice, Pete, to go to Bramall Lane, wasn't it? And come away with a one win, a clean sheet. And I thought not a bad performance on the day.
Definitely. I think it was a really interesting game. You know, I mean, not to make too much of a big deal out of it, but I think previous seasons, that's exactly the kind of game that we end up drawing or losing. It's exactly the kind of match that we come away from seeing it as another missed opportunity, because Sheffield United played really, really well in that game. I thought they were excellent. It was clear they'd had a bit more rest than us. They were really organised. They were looking to hit us on the counter. Caused us a lot of problems. And we had to concentrate for the full, 95, 96 minutes, something daft like that. I don't know where they got that added time from, by the way. And I think, you know, all Evertonians were probably watching it thinking, here it comes, 1-1, 1-1. And it didn't, but I think that does represent a really interesting culture shift. I do. I think we're starting to see a real chink in a different kind of mentality, just winning games, you know, scrappily. Gylfi Sigurdsson doing what Gylfi Sigurdsson should be doing for that kind of player, again, for the price tag he commands, with the, you know, the type of footballer he is. That's exactly why he's in that team, to take a chance. That was probably the one gilt-edged chance we had in that entire game. And he took it. And there's been a few times with Gylfi Sigurdsson where he's had opportunities like that, and he's, you know, he tries to place it a lot, doesn't he? He never really puts his foot through a ball, and, you know, he's missed them. But he took the chance, and he's come in for a lot of stick, hasn't he? I think, particularly the past 18 months, and I think he really deserves a lot of credit recently for the performances he's put in, because he's winning us games. So I thought it was a fantastic result, really good 3 points.
It's funny you mentioned Sigurdsson as well, because I saw your tweet, Andy, just after the game about Gylfi Sigurdsson. Because on the whole during the game, he wasn't particularly effective. You know, I think he's done, don't get me wrong, I'm not sitting here slagging off. Over the last few weeks, I think he has done, you know, particularly well. But we're seeing Sigurdsson perform at a much better level than we'd seen in the previous, you could argue, 12, 18 months if you want to. I think, you know, I'm fairly satisfied with what I'm seeing from Gylfi Sigurdsson. But on the day, he didn't do a great deal. But then, like Pete said, he scored a goal, which Gylfi Sigurdsson should be scoring. And he was in a position that he shouldn't have been there, because Carlo had said to him before then to go and play defensive midfield. But he was there, and he put the ball away like he should be doing, didn't he?
I think, you know, I'm quite a harsh critic of Gylfi Sigurdsson. I think it's partly because of what he should be bringing to the team and what we hoped he'd be. But no, I think I said this to someone on WhatsApp. I said, if that chance had fell to Bernard or a Wobi, I don't think we would have got 3 points. I think that chance needed to fall to two people on the pitch. And, you know, obviously it fell to one of them and he put the ball away, which is all we need to do. Obviously, if he did that more often, I think I and others wouldn't be on his back as much. But, you know, I think he's played reasonably well recently. I think he's put a shift in. I think he's done everything we've asked of him. I think, you know, we thought we'd struggle without certain players in the team. He's obviously helped us along. You know, he's played pretty well. He's created some chances. I think overall he's had a good season. He had a good start to the season as well, actually. He had a bit of a middling period. But no, I think Gylfi's been good. And overall in that game, I just think it's one of those games where you look at it and think, we needed our most creative players to win that game 2-3, 4-0. I think we didn't have a lot of goals on the pitch. With Richarlison, you know, being out as well. It was a difficult game, and we didn't have the full-backs to stretch them out, because we obviously play centre-backs at full-back. So it was going to be a difficult game, and to get the 1-0 win, I think that you'd take those 3 points all day. The manner of the performance wasn't perfect, but, you know, a win's a win at the end of the day. And as Pete rightly said there, years gone by, that would have been a banana skin where we would have fell over on it very much, very easily. So, yeah, positive performance, and we move on. You don't have to dwell on that type of performance.
Yeah, I agree with you there, mate. I actually think... the game was just the game was a kind of almost like a typical sort of Christmas type fixture, wasn't it? You know, it was quite a hard watch, really. You know, it was kind of whoever gets the first goal is probably going to win it. And Sheffield United have had a lot of games like that in recent times. They've lost pretty much nearly all their games by one goal. They're obviously struggling to score goals. Don't know how Liverpool got 25 mil for Brewster, by the way, but that's another story. But he clearly doesn't suit the way they play, does he, at all? And, you know, really, it was a game of few chances, and we just had to take that one chance. And I agree with you. I thought Sigurdsson, yeah, he was okay, but when it came to him, I mean, the touch from Bernard for me, I think I put a little tweet out saying that's why we scored that. So many players there might have had a wild swing at it, or took a touch and got tackled, or it's that first touch just stunned it. He's got that in his locker. We all know that. He's great technically. And he picked out Decore. And Decore, who I thought had a really good game, by the way, he's starting to really look, you know, as he's getting fitter, he's looking better and better for me. And, you know, it's a nice little pick out to Sigurdsson there as well. Again, he could have got a shot off, but he didn't. He knew Sigurdsson was on the outside of him, laid it into him. And Sigurdsson's capable of that. We all know technically he's very good. You know, he has scored some cracking goals for us. You know, he loves a side foot shot. He just stroked that in the corner. Where we all get frustrated with Gylfi is that he's, you know, he can go missing in so many games. You know, I think he's a passenger in a lot of games, and I think that's what frustrates Everton fans. He always seems that split second too late, or he slides, like Mike, you always seem to be texting to argue, there's Gylfi sliding again when the ball goes like past him, like by inches every time. And he's just that sort of frustrated. But he will never be an up and atom type player, is he? He's almost a bit of a luxury player, really. And, you know, he has had an indifferent career with us. But, you know, I was chuffed for him. He's definitely raised his level the last few weeks. Almost coincidentally, since he's announced him and his missus are having a kid, and he's almost gone on to another level. No, I am chuffed for him, and he's obviously filled the void that we've got with the injuries we've had. But again, I thought Iwobi did all right. You know, Iwobi's really, really stepped up the last few weeks. He looks like he's playing with confidence. When he gets it now, he's not looking to release it. He's looking. His first thought is, right, am I going to run at my man here? Am I going to try and beat him? And if you can't beat him on the outside, he's comfortable coming inside and playing nice little passes. And you know, I thought Iwobi played pretty well as well. But a shout out to Calvert-Lewin as well, because although it was a tough game for him, what a goal that'd have been off his chest. That long diagonal ball. I mean, that'd have been you're talking about one of the goals of the season there. If he buries that, he just didn't quite get enough cut spin on it, did he? It just sort of went straight, didn't it? If he'd got a little bit of cut on it, it probably would have gone inside the post. But I thought Dom, you know, he needs a rest, doesn't he? He definitely needs a rest. I imagine the FA Cup game will probably be that now. But, you know, he is starting to look a little bit more tired, isn't he?
No, I just wanted to come in there. About Iwobi, I think he has been much improved this season. I think at times last season, he looked a bit of a lost cause, didn't he? And I think obviously the one people are going on about at the moment is the final ball, which yes, does need to get much better. The thing I would say is a slight little bit more patience. I know we did cost enough money that we shouldn't have a lot of patience for him. But I think at Arsenal, it was a lot of triangles, third man runs, little short passes. He was never that out in that winger. He was whipping balls in all the time to the box. That's not Arsenal's game. So I think it's something he needs to adapt his game to. And I think hopefully we'll be able to, even if he's the first player off the bench, you know, he just needs to adapt his game to what we need it to be. And I think he'll be fine as an option for Carlo. I think he's earned his trust now, which is good.
He likes to play forward, though, doesn't he? That's the key. You know, sorry, Mike, go on, you were going to say, go on.
No, just, and I agree with that point, he does like to play forward. You've always said, Lee, since he's come in, he's always playing. He receives the ball and he's looking forward. He's always got that little half turn. He wants to play forward. That's his game. But I think, like you've already said, I think he's playing with confidence. He's got a manager. Yeah. I think Carl's alluded to it as well. Like Carl was saying to him, you know, trust yourself, have confidence in your ability, you know, but what you can do. Getting a run of games is great for him. You know, that Fulham game was not the making of Iwobi at Everton, but that Fulham game was the game where we saw what Iwobi can do. You know, playing in that wing-back position in that back five, if you like. And he was exceptional that game. And he's not really looked back for me. I thought once again, I mean, some people say it was a bit ineffective, but it wasn't the game really for quality or of quality. And I still thought that he stood out yet again. And that little bit of skill on the far side later on in the game was something absolutely fantastic. And, you know, we're seeing him coming inside with the ball as well, even on the right-hand side. He's quite happy to come inside and make things happen. And I'm delighted for him, you know, the fact that he's getting a run of games, he's building his confidence. The fans are now, he put a message out on Twitter thanking people yesterday for the support. And I think it's great that he's got a little bit of love from the fan base now, because he's had a tough start to his Everton career, you know, whether it be injuries, form, you know, people maybe not believing in him. But he's got a manager there who's saying, you know, take your chance and go and grab it. And to be fair, he's one of the names now, you know, when we look at the team every single game, I expect him to start and I want him to start, because I know he can impact things, and that's a great place for him, I think, to be in.
Do you think, Mike, that he's earned his holiday on the private jet now? Do you think fans will be more accepting if we get the sequel to the video? Do you think everyone will be, you know, pushing him onto the plane race to go on his holidays?
Yeah, listen, another 2020 highlight, that one, wasn't it? You know, how footballers can spend the money.
That was just shocking, that. But I do agree with you, Mike. It was a great bit of man management by Carlo, didn't he? He came out and said, like, Iwobi needs to believe in himself. You know, he even used the words, and we all rate him here. You know, it's almost his biggest nemesis does he believe in his own ability? And ever since then, that's Carlo's way of sort of giving him a little arm around the shoulder, that, wasn't it? To say, look, we believe in you, son. We think you're a top player. Go out there and show it. And he's starting to show it now. He's starting to show, you know, he's playing with confidence, because he is trying tricks, like you said, that one in the corner. you know, almost reminiscent of JJ, isn't it? He's his uncle, isn't he? I think JJ's his uncle. And we all know he had great feet, but no, it's good to see him. And it was one of those sort of war of attrition games that could have easily ended up 0-0, like you said, Pete, but we got through it. We took our chance and, you know, 12 points from four games and, you know, tricky four games, really. It's like I said, when we recorded the other week, you know, Carlo's obviously found another way to win when we've got sort of almost our key creators out, like the likes of James and even our destroyers like Allen and basically our best 11. He's found a way to kind of go, right, okay, well, we can basically be difficult to beat and our backers to try and create enough to win the games. And it has done that. I mean, I know Andy, you've alluded to, you know, it is all well and good having four centre backs playing there and obviously making us solid, but, you know, it also detracts from us, doesn't it, when we try and come across a team like a Sheffield United to try and break him down with width, doesn't it?
It's important that we find different ways against different teams. I think sometimes, I know a lot of the time, you know, Liverpool are probably accused of playing the same way, but they've got the players to play the same way in every game. I think with us, I think when we play, you know, obviously early in the season we were destroying teams, but we're still conceding soft goals, and I think it caught up to us. And obviously when players started getting injured, we didn't have the personnel. I think we need to sort of amalgamate the two styles. Obviously that solidity and keeping it tight at the back, but also that free flowing football that we saw early in the season, and we'll be content. Well, you know, we'll be not contenders for the title maybe, but we'll certainly be up and around those top six positions, which is where we want to be. But yeah, I think he's found, as you say, a different way of playing. I think if he can sort of, you know, work players into the team in different positions and get them to do jobs for him.
Yeah, like you said, I think it's absolutely key, and I think expected as well that we do have different ways and find different ways of setting up against teams to go on and win the game. And this run that we're on, you know, to as I alluded to earlier on, you know, who would have thought 13 points from possible 15 in a really difficult month against, you know, some real quality. And like we said, that game against Sheffield United could have been a real potential banana skin where in years gone by we could have gone there and slipped up. We keep on seeing the same sort of tweets, don't we, from Everton fans saying, you know, they haven't won a game all season, typical Everton, you know, we go there, they get the first win. And that's the kind of mentality, and a lot of people hate it. I hate it. I hate that expression of, oh, Everton, Allen, you know, it's just nonsense. You know, we need to, we talk about mentality shifts. We all need to shift our mentality, the club, from within the club, you know, down to the tea lady, whatever it might be. You know, we need to all get on board with what's going on. And expect our side to be able to go up and put in a professional performance against a side who's bottom of the table and come away with a win. Great to see. You know, we've said it. The players, I'm sure, are tired. Difficult run of games. But he put a shift in. Before I round off this segment, Pete, Tom Davis, probably one of his best performances this season, definitely deserves a bit of a mention as well.
Yeah, definitely. No, I thought he was fantastic. You know, really good energy. Being asked to do that sort of defensive job for the team, which, let's be right, it's not his natural position. It's not the type of football that Tom Davis currently is for us in terms of a midfielder. So I think he's shown a lot more maturity for me and a lot more discipline. I think in previous seasons he's picking up yellows very quickly. He's making sort of little mistakes, and then you can see that he's aware he's made mistakes, and that's probably getting to him and it's affecting him on the pitch a little bit. So I was really pleased for him, actually, just to see him put in a real disciplined, consistent job. And it's probably really helping him out playing alongside better defensive players. You know, the fact that he's got Decore alongside him, you know, and I'm sure being around players like, you know, like Allen in the squad is doing him the world of good, really, and helping him, you know, come along, which is nice to see.
Yeah, I thought Tom, that's his best game for us in a long time. He plays that position for England under-21s, doesn't he? And I think that's for me, is his best position. For me, Tom plays his best stuff when he just keeps it simple. And, you know, win the ball, give the ball, keep it easy. And you can see he just grew into the game. You know, he was winning the ball back. He was, you know, making the right pass. He was, you know, you could just see he got more and more confident, and that's the best game I've seen him play in a while. And, you know, with Allen being out, I mean, there's rumours he might be back in the next couple of weeks. So, you know, he may well play again against West Ham and possibly in the FA Cup as well. So that sort of sitting role I think it sort of suits him, really. He sort of lost his way, isn't he, ever since really that City goal, really, which like catapulted him to stardom. He's never really found what is he as a midfielder. But obviously the boys at England think he's a bit of a holder. So for me, I'd say that is best. That's his best position.
Just quickly before we move on, I wanted to, you know, say that Bernard and Gomez did a good job when they come on the pitch. Mm. I think they sort of improved, Evan. I think we needed that change and that spark. And I know they haven't been, you know, players that we could rely on this season at times. They've been in up and down as players, but I thought they came on and you made a difference. Obviously, Andre Gomez seems to be two different players at times at the moment. Some games he can be, you know, what people expect of him, and other games he can just look completely lost. I think they came off the bench and did add something to the game. I think with Tom, I think there's a maturity. I think people allude to a discipline to his game. I think the decision making, not giving away silly flowers, not running to blind alleys, not giving, you know, passing the ball forward when he probably an easier pass on at times. I know he does like to push the tempo forward, and that is good for Evan, but it's when you do it and how you do it. And I think he's at that age now where Dom and Mason Holgate were at last season, 22-23, where he needs to start getting onto a certain level if he's going to stay at Evan. I don't think he's ever going to be starting every game for Evan. I just don't think he's that level. But if he's your fourth or fifth midfielder, is that really a bad thing? Probably not. I think if he improves enough, I think that'll be a decent squad player for us, who cares about the club, of course.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Gomez, mate, as well. I thought he did right when he came on. He was unlucky not to get that, was it a pen? A free kick or a pen? I mean, for me, it was certainly a foul. Yeah, I mean, so how the ref's not given that is a shocker. But, you know, he's a human being, Gomez. He's come back from a horrendous injury. And you know, he obviously clearly he's on social media. He probably clearly a lot of people are sort of atting him, you know, on Twitter, especially giving him abuse. You know, you put that Christmas photo up, and a few people were commenting on it. And like, to be fair, those fellas got put right by fellow Blues. And you know, we don't want to be that type of fan base. You know what I mean? Atting players if they're playing poorly. You know, he obviously reads that, and he clearly is, as he's shown his time in Barcelona, that, you know, these sort of things probably affect him more than most. You know, so we want to get behind him. We want to get behind him because, for me, I know obviously he divides opinion, but for me, there's still a player there. Yeah, he has lost that little sort of burst that he did have. But you know, Carlo clearly rates him. He started him at the start of the season in our sort of when we had our best 11 available, and you know, he clearly likes him because, you know, he's been bringing him on. So, you know, if he can get a confident Gomez in that midfield alongside Allen and alongside Decore. And potentially, you know, another in Gbamin when he comes back, then, you know, I'd still have him in the squad.
Yeah, everyone knows that we're fans of Andre Gomez, and like, I think it is really important people do remember still about that injury. It wasn't long ago, like you said, Lee. Carlo was picking him at the start of the season as well. Well, right, like, you know, rightly so. Like you said, Andy, he's being inconsistent, and we've definitely seen two sides of Andre Gomez this season. And I hope he does get back to his best like early day, because on his day, you know, we saw when he first came into the over to the club how good he can be, you know, and we want to see more of that. And I do hope that it works out for him, and he's given that time, of course. But you know, with the quality of the squad is always going to increase, I think, now with who's at the helm. Obviously, the Farhad Moshiri is not going to sort of be wanting your more average players, certainly from a transfer point of view. So the quality is going to improve, and players have got to move along with that. If you want to stay at the club and you want to get a position in the start 11 or the squad, you've got to move. You've got to move with the quality. So, you know, hopefully that does pull a few of them along, and if it doesn't, then obviously we will, I'm sure, in over the next sort of 12 18 months look to replace him and improve, and that's the way the club are going. But it was nice to see Bernard, as you said as well, you know, come on, have an impact, and that's exactly what we need, because we've been saying for so long about, you know, we look at our bench sometimes and think, where's the spark going to come from, who's going to come on and change the game? And it was nice to see, you know, a couple of players come on and take a bit of a chance and do something positive. So that was good.
What do you think on Bernard, Dan? Do you think he's going to go in January, by the way? He's been linked with Roma again, hasn't he?
It depends on what the club want for him. I think it's going to be a difficult market. I think if I was, you know, taking my Everton hat off and I was looking at Bernard for a team, I'd probably want to take a loan with an option to buy, if I'm honest. I think, you know, you don't, I wouldn't, if Everton wants a 15 million, I'd be quite reticent to pay that, but you know, we'll see. It depends. Obviously, his old manager, Paolo Fonseca, is there. You know, I think at the Italian game, although quite physical, so it's a question mark for him. I think that the game is a little bit slower tempo. I think, you know, not much slower, but it's a little bit slower, and I think he might work out there. But there's options for him. I think if we're looking at it right now, I think, you know, Bernard is the if we want to bring another forward in, is probably the odd one out, given his wage. And you can't have a fourth winger on that sort of money sitting in the stands or on the bench. So I think, yeah, if Everton got the right offer for him, similar to John Joe Kenny probably as well, I think they'd allow them to move on.
Yeah. And I mean, we think obviously the transfer window is going to be fairly quiet from our point of view. You know, there's been a bit of talk. We may as well just pick up on it briefly now. Sami Khedira is apparently over in England talking to Everton amongst other, but wants to talk to other clubs as well. See that as a goer, Andy, or you think that's just
It feels very Ivanovic, you know, where he's putting himself out there, like in the summer of Ivanovic. I know Ivanovic got his move to West Brom, but, you know, putting himself out there, trying to get clubs to latch onto him. You know, I look at it, we've got 8 centre midfielders on the books, Bersic is not even in the squad, you know, and we've got, you know, Gbamon, who's injured, and Delphi's obviously injured. I know we probably, now it'd be great to have that extra midfielder, but I just don't see it happening. Maybe it will. I know Carlo probably likes him from his time at Real Madrid, but I just think with the numbers we've got on the squad, we can't, you know, obviously I think Bersic should go in January, but we can't pay 9 centre midfielders. There's just not enough places in the squad for that number. So unless a couple go, I severely doubt it. And then I also worry about his legs. I don't think he's the right type of player we need to be signing. But, you know, if Carlo wants a short-term option that he knows will raise the levels in training, he probably knows much better than I do what Sami Khedira can bring to the side.
Yeah, I think it'd be interesting. It'd be an interesting January for me, whether we do anything or not, because surely in the back of his mind, Carlo will be thinking, here, right, we're sitting, what are we at the minute? 3-4 points off top? You know, you'd have thought that at the start of the season. You'd have thought that at the start of the season. You know, we were, United scored a deflected winner in the last minute against Wolves. You know, otherwise we'd be sitting, you know, sitting in the top three. So, does he go to Mashiri now for me and kind of go, right, this is not kind of what I was expected. We were probably aiming, if we're honest, probably Europa maybe first full season under him. Does he think, you know what, why don't we go in if we can shift a couple of people out off the wages? Why don't we try and get a couple of players in to try and really sort of make a push for that top four?
I'd say there's a couple of reasons, really. And obviously this comes down to Marcel Brands as well, in the sense that, you know, we do, obviously with my company, we do a lot of research into transfer windows. In January, you know, obviously people could name to be Bruno Fernandes, you know, Aubameyang, who've come in and hit the ground running. But generally, players who sign in January don't make that much of a difference in the second half of the season. Players who are signed in January, so in some cases, in a good amount of cases, are good. It's a good bedding period for them, and they might contribute small amounts, but they don't. They're not going to be, they're going to change the course of the title race. So, if you could sign a player that we wanted to sign in the summer early and bed them in for 6 months, because maybe they're coming from a league that, you know, maybe France or Belgium, wherever it may be, that might be an idea. I just think unless you can get someone who you're already going to sign in the summer, you shouldn't try and mortgage this whole season by signing someone just like a Josh King. Let's be honest, I think Josh King would be, you want to sell him probably in the summer or the summer after. He's not going to make Everton much better. Maybe he'd help us in the short term, but I think Everton needs to plot them next moves out fairly carefully. I know it's very exciting where we are now, but I think you should stick the course to the plan, and make, you know, because we're maybe ahead of where we are now. But I think even with the women we've shown, without those injuries, we can stay at a certain level. But that's just my perspective. Obviously, other people think different.
I think the romantic in me wants us to get Isco. I know obviously people disagree with me, but I just think, you know, obviously he maybe wasn't at the level he was a couple of years ago, but I just think, yeah, I look at that game like a Sheffield United game there, and we'll have games similar to that in the running towards the end of the season. We'll have games where we're going to have to open up teams that are sitting off. And for me, you know, if Isco was even coming off the bench even, or even like if Hammers was out like he has been now for a good few weeks, you know, and we can get him to some sort of level of fitness. He's the type of guy that can open locks, isn't he? I mean, he's got that sort of ability in his locker. I mean, he's a lovely footballer when he's flying. I mean, he was one of the best midfielders in the world only a few years ago. What do you think, Pete? Would you have him?
I think like Andy and Mike said, it depends on the business in the other area of the squad. I mean, ideal world, we ship out Tosin on loan. I know Fulham are looking for a striker. For me, you know, he can do what Mitrovic used to do for them. Let's get Tosin to Fulham. We can get Bolasi out, Besic out. You know, if it could free up a bit of room for a couple of loans, you know, for me, if you gave me Diego Costa on loan to the end of the season, I know it's never going to happen. Plus Isco, I'd bite your arm off because I think you're right. Look at the position we're in. We want to be bringing in players that improve the squad we've got now in January. And surely that's what the January window's for if you're going to do business.
Even if it's just a loan to get us into Europe, isn't it? Just a loan, just to sort of just to cover the injuries. Look, we brought. Who did we bring off the bench against United? Who did we bring off the bench? Like I said, it was Tosin, Bernard, and who else? We brought someone else on. Davis, I think we brought on as well. So I mean that says it all, doesn't it? I mean, if let's say that bench has got maybe like Pete said there, maybe Isco or Diego Costa to run around like a madman for 10 minutes to try and get a winner, then. You know, he's obviously not the same player he was, nowhere near, but, you know, people said that about Cavani, and he's obviously looking quite sharp for United when he's playing, isn't he?
I'd say with Cavani, he scored 70 goals in the last three seasons. Yeah. Diego Costa scored 19. I think there are different levels of decline. The issue with play, another thing to think about, and this is Carlos Avenue, I don't know anything about the harmony in the squad. You bring your players in at certain times, it's a fragile sort of system of squad, and I think if you're bringing Isco when he was sitting on the bench, he's getting all that money, then you've got other people who want new contracts. It's a balance. But don't be wrong, if you're bringing them in on loan, you know, short term, you know, I'm not going to be against that because you're not really losing anything. You're not committing, you know, 25, 30 million on another 28-year-old. I think that's one thing you'd like us to guard against. But no, I think if the right... And I think that's the key with the January transfer. Something will pop up that maybe will interest Everton, and we'll have to see whether they react because... Some player teams will bring players in, and then the player will go, actually, I think my place is under threat here, and the Euros, we'll see if it happens, is round the corner. I want them to move, and Everton might be there to just pick up, mop up the pieces there. And that's things that can happen in January. We've just got to, I don't think we're going to say we're completely out, but we've just got to monitor what goes on, see if anything comes up that we like. You never know, something could pop up.
Mike, would you have him?
Isco, you've asked me this before, haven't you? As I say, the jury's out from a sense of if you went and said, like, you know, get him on a short-term deal or, you know, whatever it might be, it's how long it takes to get someone who's not really played to any level of fitness to actually impact the game. And that's my biggest concern because he'll be on a decent wedge, make no mistake. We know he's got quality, but I just don't know whether you could get him to a particular level where, you know, you could justify paying him a decent wage to sort of, you know, to go and win those games because I think it'd just come too late. So there's no doubt in the quality. There's no doubt that he's got, you know, he's a fantastic player on his day and when he's fully fit. But it's a massive gamble. I mean, football's a gamble, of course. And if you want Champions League football, sometimes you've got to roll the dice, haven't you? But whether you'd go in there for someone like Isco who's not really played, I don't know. We'll see. You know, like Andy said, you know, I'm sure Everton at some point over the January window will be tempted by someone. But a lot depends on who we can ship out. You've got players, we said, you know, sitting there, Legs and Bolasi sitting there, you know, who's on, what, 70 odd grand, 75 grand a week. Obviously, Bessett's nowhere near the squad, sitting there on a decent little wage. Those kind of players need to be binned off. Now, whether we just, and this sounds really harsh, whether we just start saying to players, listen, let's come mutual termination, get them off the books, because I'm sick of all that. Sorry, Andy, I'll let you come in a second. I'm just going to moan for a second. I'm sick of that side of it, you know, and because we've been dealt, I think, so many poor hands over recent years and so many failed management moves, if you like, and obviously the Steve Walsh years and Koeman and, you know, Silver and whatever it might be, you know, the money's gone to the wrong places, and I don't blame these players. I said it before about Bolasi, for example. It annoys me the fact that he could have got a move in the summer and didn't go. You know, that annoys me. But at the end of the day, he's on whatever he's on. So he's within his rights. If Everton have given him a contract for so many years, he's within his rights to sit on the contract and get paid his money. You know, we can moan all we want, but we paid him the contract. We did. You know, we got injured in a freak injury against Man United. Wasn't his fault. But I think sometimes you've got to be cruel to be kind, and we've got to protect ourselves really more than anyone else, and where we want to go and what we want to do.
I think the key with the terminations is, I think that's, you know, I've done it wrong. I think Everton needs to start moving players out. I think that's key. I think we've got a couple of players out in the summer, and obviously 2022 is another key time for players moving out. But when you're paying people up front, it's at other cost. And I guess it depends on the accountancy, is because Everton now, with this moving forward of us towards Europe, needs to be really mindful of FFP. I know it was suspended this year, but it does come back in the next season as an amalgamation of the two seasons. So we really need to be careful how where money goes. Obviously, if you're amortising over the contract, it looks better on the accounts. So letting players run out the contract can sometimes work out a tiny bit better. But don't be wrong, we just can't carry, as Mike rightly points out, players in the stands who are in 70, 80 grand a week. The club can never be in that situation again. We have to get everyone, you know, earning the money, if you will, and being as part of the squad. That's why I think, you know, Marcel and Carlo have talked about having a 22, 23-man squad with the rest of the squad made up by the academy products, obviously, what wants to get to a certain level. So I think that's what the idea and focus is. But obviously, we're going to have to take our lumps while we get these players off the books. Like Matthew Pennington.
Yeah, indeed. Well, it's interesting though. You know, there's rumours circulating around that obviously we're looking to make Olsen an offer. Mm. You know, does that then? You know, are they doing that maybe to try and think, well, that opens up potentially, you know, a loan option, a couple more loan options if he's then taken off.
It does. I think we're allowed two in each window. Well, you'll have four over a year, two in each window registered. I think with Olsen, I think I think he's pushed Pickford enough where we've seen an uptick in Pickford's performances. And I think he is a pretty good backup goalie. And I think because of his height for certain teams, I think he gives us something completely different than Pickford. So actually, as a rotation, they're not too bad. I'm not too sure whether they will or not. Or the lads, they'll you know, say we'll buy him at the end of the year. Obviously, as I say, while you're away there, Lee, we're balancing the books. We have to make sure that we balance those accounts, so when UEFA and when the Premier League look at them in the summer before we buy players, you know, we haven't got to overstep the mark, really.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Of course,
fingers crossed. You know.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. But let's move swiftly on. I don't want to dwell on this one either. But I think we need to bring it up, and that's the whole saga surrounding the postponements of the Man City game. There's a lot of talk now. I've been keeping it abreast of Twitter while we've been talking, because this story, and Lee loves this. He loves the scandal, and he brought it to our attention this afternoon.
Is this Kyle Walker?
The Kyle Walker situation, yeah, about this party that apparently involves 19 different players from various Premier League clubs, Fulham included. Obviously, they had the game postponed against Tottenham. Obviously, Man City, their game against us was postponed. I think Sancho was involved in this, a private jet from Dortmund. But there's a lot of talk about this party has taken place. And was it, Lee, you know more than I do. Were you there? 11 of the 19 players have come down with COVID?
I've got some photos, mate, but I think I'd have a few people on my case if... No. I only. To be honest, I forwarded you on from another group that I was in. So don't shoot the messenger. we don't know, do we? At the end of the day, it's all conjecture. We don't know. But I mean, Andy, have you heard anything?
I think this has been made into like a mountain out of a molehill. Really, I think. Don't be wrong, City. Obviously, once the game, you know, postponed, I think we're all in agreement here. That's probably benefited Everton, the game being postponed, considering how many games he played. And I think Everton's response to say we're not happy with the way it was dealt with, I think people have read into that. And I think as Evertonians, we absolutely love a conspiracy theory. You know, obviously the media are against us. The whole of Sky wants us to get relegated. The VARs, you know, we love all that. And don't be wrong. There have been a few incidents, namely Pierluigi Gallina, which we're fairly suspect in the past, let's be honest. But I think in this case, I don't know, I just can't see anything coming of it, unless I'm completely wrong and this party was happening. I thought there was a party a couple of months ago, and I remember Tammy Abraham being involved. I can't remember, you know, whether that's been a carried on over an incident, I don't know. But I don't know, I think people want those 3 points, and I just think... In COVID, with players probably could have got infected. I just think it'd be poor taste. That's 3 points off someone. You know, if they provided a medical certificate, which was valid, then I can't see anything really happening. But we'll see.
It wouldn't surprise you with Kyle Walker, though, would you? You know what I mean? I mean, he's known for that. And
he seems like a lad about town, a man about town, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He's obviously one of the... I mean, and is it coincidence, then, they've had it in London? Obviously, some of the Fulham players may have been and may or may not been involved. You can imagine the likes of Loftus-Cheek, people like Popos possibly being there. You know what I mean? You know, obviously, caveat with this, we don't know that. Obviously, before we
allegedly
naming players, but it all of a sudden, you know, there's suddenly like, what is it, 18 tested positive the other day. And then the weird thing for me about this is that City said they stayed in a hotel. And then the reason they were cancelling the game is because they felt they were going to do another round of testing. And then they felt that there was going to be a lot more people in the squad were going to test positive. And then the following day, they did a load of round of testing, and lo and behold, the academy's back open again for training. No one's tested positive, so it's a bit of a weird one, and it kind of that story of like we stayed in a hotel in London. Sideshow.
I don't think Everton have complained over the game getting postponed. I think that their issue is the lack of communication. I think they you know, and, which is right. I think Everton need to act like a top club, and so you need to say in a public forum, you need to consult us. We are a big club. You must consult us in everything you do. I've got no problem in that. I can sense the fans want those three points. Desperate obviously brings us closer to those across the park, doesn't it? So we'll see what happens. But you know, it's a fun story at this time of the year, I guess.
I think you're right, though, Andy. I think the key thing to take from it, because we see lunatics like Kevin Horlock, who played for Man City in Division 2 or whatever it was back in the day.
Kevin Horlock.
You know what I mean? Well, yeah, but say that basically it's not relevant because we haven't got Neville Southall in goal kind of thing. Basically, you're no longer a football superpower in this country, so whatever you say doesn't matter. I think the point that we need to make is that Everton are making a point that the game was postponed. I was delighted it was postponed, I'll be honest with you. I thought, this is great for us. From a scheduling point of view, it was farcical. We were playing two games in 3 days. So for me, it was great. It means we get a nice little rest before we go in against West Ham. So I was absolutely delighted it got postponed. And, you know, whatever the reason for the positive test, whether it was 2, 3, 4, 5, whether it was the chef, the groundsman, whatever it might have been, safety is paramount in the current climate. So you've got to be careful. I don't want our players mixing with their players. I don't want Carlo mixing with their players and manager. You know, it's all about safety and protecting ourselves as well. So I was quite happy with it. And that's Everton are disputing the postponements. It's about if you've got a match between two teams, then the discussion happens between the two teams in the Premier League, not Man City in the Premier League. It happens between all parties.
I seen people last night complaining that Tom Davis was out in town, you know, helping feed the homeless and giving them clothes, which, by the way, is a great credit to him. He probably didn't want the publicity, let's be fair. But, you know, and then, you know, people saying the Man City should have played the game. Wasn't there more of a risk, you know, in the Man City with the number of players they had at the time? You know, it's, I think Everton fans need to focus their attention on on good things rather than silly things at times. I think, you know, I think this has been, as I say, we mean about out of a mortal. I think Everton were right to raise the concern that they should be involved in decisions. But, you know, seeing that, it'd be a fun story if it turns out that this party's true. You know, I'm sure there'd be, you know, I'm sure that, you know, Jack Grealish and Ross Barkley were there leading. No, I'm joking. I'm a legend. That's just me joking. Then she'll be the first candidates there, wouldn't he? But, you know, it's just one of those things, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm sure, as I say, I'm sure that story looks like it's gathering pace at the moment. Elton Wellesby is sort of tweeting around about it now. So once Elton Wellesby gets on board,
back from
Granada, Granada fame, then listen, something's going down. So we'll see how it evolves over the course of tonight. But it was a scandal. That's all I'm saying. But let's leave that there. We are going to end the show shortly on our personal highlights of 2020, Everton related, of course. But game coming up, big game for ourselves, trying to keep this winning run going. And we welcome David Moyes back to Goodison Park with his West Ham side. And it's a game for me, obviously, no fans allowed in Goodison Park since we've moved into the Tier 3 category. So 2,000 fans who should have gone. And I have to say as well, PT was due to attend the City game as well. So we're forcing for yourself. I'm sitting here saying I was made up, the game was called off, not thinking the fact that you were sitting at home in your Everton undies with your flag and your ass on waiting to go.
Oh, I'm just glad they didn't crack open a fresh set of foot warmers.
Exactly, guys. But it's such a shame because I know we were talking about it before you were going, and Lee was saying how jealous he was, and he went, "Listen, don't get jealous until they get in the ground." And then the next minute, the announcement comes through that the game's being called off. So such a trying time, you know. Fans, you know, those who have been lucky to attend the games in recent weeks, I'm sure it's been great for them to get back inside Goodison. But we're back to where we were. But you know, Pete, David Moyes brings his West Ham side to Goodison. Not in bad form. He's got them. We could argue play the David Moyes way. Seems to have found a little bit of a proper David Moyes sign in Soucek as well, who's doing the business for them. So it's going to be a difficult game, isn't it?
Yes and no. Yes and no. I watched the Brighton game. It was a really interesting game because there were four terrible goals, 2-2, and it was just a case of awful defences. And I thought West Ham set up really, really negative. I was quite surprised with it. I know they've got a couple of players out. I know they're really missing Antonio because they seem to sort of crystallise a quite nice way of playing, utilising his pace on the break, and got them into sort of an organised counter-attacking 4-2-3-1. And I think they've really missed him. But they just seem to set up to try and stifle Brighton and did it really, really ineffectively. And Brighton, as usual, played some really nice football. Should have done a lot more with the amount of possession and chances they had. West Ham ended up getting, I think, two quite fortunate goals. So I think it all depends how he sets them up against us. I don't think he'll set them up with the sort of five at the back like they played against Brighton. I think they tried to just match Brighton man for man in that formation. So they'll probably go with a back four. But I think we can expect them just to try and stand us up and just try and stay in the game for as long as possible. It's not often I say this, but I feel quite confident that we'll beat them. And I think we could beat them by two or three. I know we've got a great record against West Ham anyway. But, yeah, I just don't think they'll be able to keep us out. Not with that defence.
They couldn't live with us when we played them in the League Cup, could they? I think it depends how we play. I think obviously Carlo Alavra, I think Richarlison's back, isn't he? I think he's been called fit, and obviously Hammers is still on his Christmas break. I think Coleman's ready to come back as well. So there's options there, you know, in terms of how we can play. You know, I think you could move Holgate into midfield or Godfrey, and you know, keep you know, play Coleman at right back, and obviously Richarlison will come back in, so that gives us something different. So I think the thing with Moyes is I think he's probably going to come, and I think he's right, he's probably going to come and play that, you know, the way he does against top sides. And I think he's going to be quite negative. And I think he saw what we can do against him in the League Cup. So I think he's going to be quite cautious. And I think, depending on how we set up, I think that's going to, whether we can break them down, it's going to be a big ask. I think, obviously, with Charleston being back, will help us massively. But I'd expect us to win as well. I'm pretty confident in us winning, actually.
You feel the same, Lee? Obviously, Andy and Peter are going for, you know, the confidence levels are high. Moyes probably negatively going to be setting the side up. Are you in agreement with that? Bear in mind, West Ham are only 6 points behind ourselves, sitting in 10th. We know obviously how tight the table is anyway. But they haven't had a bad start to the season at all, have they?
No, West Ham have improved a lot under Moyes this season. They really have. You know, they've made some astute signings. I like that lad at right back. Kufal looks a good player. You mentioned Soucek, Mike. He's almost got a bit of the flanies about him, hasn't he? Very dangerous on set pieces. Go on.
He didn't in there when he played for Slavia. I think David Moyes has said, "You're a big lad, you'll play this way." I think when he was a box to box midfielder, he had a bit of flair to him when he played in Czech Republic. So yeah, he has been used very effectively, you're right, Lee.
They'll be getting it into his chest in no time, don't worry, bringing it down. But I think they have got some flair players. I agree with you, Pete. I watched the Brighton game and they were very negative. They were playing with two holding midfielders. I think Noble even played in that game, if I remember rightly. Obviously Brighton deservedly went in 1-0 half time. Bit of a comedic goal, but they went in 1-0. And this is a team, Brighton, by the way, who struggled to score goals full stop. And then obviously brought on a few more creative players second half, and they probably had more of the game. One thing that does worry me is Antonio coming back. He came back against Southampton Okay, the game was 0-0, like a lot of games in the last fixture list, you know, very low scoring, sort of low level affairs, really, because obviously players are absolutely on their backsides. But the fact they've played, we haven't, we should be fresher. But I think if Antonio does start, I think he gives Mina and Keane a lot more problems than Allaire, who I think there's a player there with Allaire. But if you watch him, you know, the amount of times the ball gets brought up to him, whether it's, you know, chest height, head height, feet, and he loses it, you don't see him sprinting back to try and win it back. He's typically French in that respect. I'd be far more worried if Antonio was playing instead of Allaire, put it that way. Antonio will run the channels, he'll muscle people, he'll win free kicks. He'll probably give us a lot more problems. And I've always liked Lanzini. I think Lanzini's a good footballer. He's a lovely footballer. He can cause problems. And obviously, as we know, infamously, the guy with a little left foot who scored a few times against us on the right
Jagielenko.
Side. Jagielenko, mate. I agree with you, boys. I do think we should have enough to beat them, but they've had a bit of an indifferent spell recently. You know, they've, like we said, we mentioned Brighton, they drew with them, drew with Southampton, lost comfortably to Chelsea. A Chelsea team that, by the way, you know, have struggled since we beat them. And then they drew with Palace and they obviously beat Leeds. So they're coming into it, you know, in indifferent form. But 6 points, Mike, like you said, you know, we think we've had a reasonable start to the season and they're only 6 points behind us.
Well, they were up there, weren't they? They were up there around 5th, 6th, 7th a couple of weeks ago and they've tailed off slightly in West Ham. So they were in and around where we were, but obviously bear in mind we've had now our second excellent run of the season, which has really catapulted us back up the table and put us into a really strong position at the moment. And it's important that we capitalise. Obviously the City game, the postponement, you know, it'll all go to waste for me if we don't go in and beat West Ham. We've had extra days to prepare, but extra days of rest. And there's no reason why we can't go into that game and put 2, 3, 4 past them in my opinion. But it's just important, you know, whether it's a game where they do sit deep and they say, right, try and break us down, we'll play for a 0-0. Whether we go and we win ugly 1-0 again, I'll take it every single day of the week. You've got to find a way to break sides down who set up in that manner. So that's what we failed to do effectively in recent seasons, that's for sure. You know, we struggled with a plan B. And under Carlo, we've certainly got more than you know, a plan A, that's for sure. We've seen that time and again, and we've set up in various ways this season alone. So I fully expect us to beat them and carry on that winning run. But I'm going to dive in with the first prediction. I'm going to say 3-0 Everton for this one. I'm saying that Charlton's coming back with a brace. And Michael Keane, a 25-yard chip like Philippe Albert for Newcastle against Man U. Pete?
I was going to go for the 3-0 as well, but I'll have to go with Charlison hat-trick now. I think we've all been waiting for him to absolutely batter someone, haven't we? We're all waiting for him to have that game where he sort of arrives into the season, and he's not quite got there yet, so I think he'll do against West Ham.
Andy?
I'm going to preface this, right? I've predicted the same result since the Chelsea game in every game, bar the United game, so bear with me. Everton will lose this game 5-1. We've won every game and predicted that score. So when we played Chelsea, I thought we were going to get battered, so I predicted 5-1 to Chelsea. And obviously we've won ever since, so every game I've been predicting it. So, and obviously stupidly I missed the Man United game, but alas, we'll lose 5-1. But there's a wink with that.
Lee.
I don't think it'll be a walkover as you boys think. I do think it'll be typically David Moyes will definitely set up and make them hard to break down. We'll need to come up with something. If we score first, we'll probably go on and win it, maybe, like I said, maybe 2 or 3 to it. So I'm gonna say 3-1. I think they'll score. And I do think he'll probably start with Antonio. He played a bit part against Southampton, and I do think he could cause us problems.
I wonder if he'll start Olsen because of the aerial threat of an Antonio. You know, they're going to be putting balls in the box, and a Suchek, I think his height, Olsen's height, you know, is obviously good for picking crosses out compared to Pickford, some that can struggle at times. So I wonder if that's an option.
true. Souček has scored from a few set pieces, and I think he scored four or five in the last six, hasn't he, or something like that. So he's obviously a threat. Thing is, Mina and Keane, if as much as I've said about Antonio, they'd much rather play against that type of player who likes to be, a bit of physical contact than against the sort of, rapid in behind type, wouldn't they? Do you know what I mean? So I do think they should be able to manage out, and certainly Mina's definitely been pretty much a lot more consistent the last few games. Be interesting to see what he does with the fullbacks, though, because obviously Godfrey will definitely stay left back still, but it will be interesting what you just said there, Andy. Will he bring Coleman in and then drop one of them, maybe, those guys into midfield?
I'd like to see Coleman, because I'd like to see them overloading that right-hand side. I think Mswaku, who's played a lot of games for West Ham, I don't really rate him as a defender. I think if Iwobian, and if Iwobi plays, of course, if Iwobian and Coleman can get out, I think they'll have a lot of joy and get a lot of overloads. But it just depends. Obviously, Carlo's got trust in certain players. He'll play it a certain way. But I think that is definitely an option. And I think if Holgate was, or even Godfrey, sit in front of the back four, it'd then allow the two other midfielders, whether it's Sigurdsson or Tom and Decore, to push up the pitch. Because we want to see Decore in the box more. We've obviously seen a flash of Fulham where he got that goal. We want to see that more this season. I think he'd help us immensely if he can get up to 5-6 goals.
Well, let's hope that we're all right beside you, Andy, and your 5-1, of course. But let's hope that
it's a win. It's a win, of course. Yeah.
we are going to win the game, and we can keep this run going. We're going to finish the show with a highlight, bit of a highlight, really, if you like, in terms of our own personal Everton highlights of the year. There's been, in a difficult year, obviously off the pitch, there has been some great moments from Everton, I think, this year. And I'm going to ask you each, put it on the spot for your personal highlight. So, Andy, as the guest, I will come to you first. What have you really enjoyed? What's the one moment that you've really taken a lot from this season, from Everton?
Well, since I've gone first, I'd probably like to steal what's one. I think it's not a particular moment. It's Dominic Calvert-Lewin's rise, from a championship striker for some reason to this player now who's obviously scored a lot of goals. I think Dom's rise is the biggest story this year for Everton. And then obviously, there's a little slight bit, obviously, the 8-match unbeaten streak to start the season as well.
Yeah. Pete?
I'm going to go with Duncan Ferguson hugging the ball boy.
2019. That
said,
you're not getting away with that one.
It wasn't.
Carlo came in December, didn't he?
Well, that says everything about this year, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a great moment, though, I'll give you that.
Are you going to let me have it anyway?
No.
I'm going to come back. Did DVD come out this year?
Well, for me, I agree with Andy. I think Dom, the rise of Dom has been phenomenal. He's looking more and more a complete striker every time you watch him. For me, actually, one of the highlights has been the signing of James Rodriguez and obviously the build-up to it and him coming in. And is he coming? Is he not coming? And then, we've seen him in the Titanic. We've seen him in the Titanic and all the pitch, classic Everton in it all over Twitter. And obviously, when we finally announced him, I think that was the flagship sign that Mashiri was looking for, really, a global superstar. Yes, probably, if you're going to be really critical, has he fulfilled his potential across his career? In flashes, he's looked $1 million. But for us to bring him over the line, as well as Alan as well, by the way, I think he's starting to really show the player he was before his injury. But I just think getting James over, and obviously you've seen, we all seen the images across Miami, Columbia, New York, Times Square, and it was felt like, yeah, that's what I want us to be as a football club. We need to be, like Andy said, thinking like a big club, acting like a big club in these sort of times now. And, I hate the term sort of brand in football, but, that sadly, it's a capitalist world we live in now. And it's important that, the Everton brand is spread as far and wide as possible, and obviously not just the confines of the city. So for me, getting James over the line, and then we've all been in agreement those first few games, all of us were just literally in awe of watching his ability. And it's just such a shame that we'll probably maybe this season not just get the chance to see him live in the flesh, because as fans, that's what we'd all love to see, wouldn't we?
Yeah, of course. And obviously, I'm sure those fans who got tickets, obviously in the recent ballots, thought they were going to get a chance to see Hammers through. So unfortunate, you know. He does exist, though. I can assure you does exist, and he is an Everton Football Club player. So I'm sure we will see him in due course live. And we asked people on Twitter as well about this, and Matty Dillon on the show a couple of times himself. He said, obviously, Hammers bagging the two goals against Brighton is certainly up there. But also, as well, he mentioned, and this could be yours, Pete, if you've not thought of one, about the Spirit of the Blues topping the charts. And that was also a classic highlight of 2020. That's for sure.
Some of the videos.
Keeping the ball, boy. I've checked the date. 7th of December it was. I'm not that far off.
Semantics.
He's clinging on by his finger
there. The last 12 months.
Yeah, I'll let you keep it, Pete, okay? Just to keep the peace for this episode, I'll let you keep it. Well, no, it's got to, I mean, obviously, you've all mentioned Calvert-Lewin, and most definitely Michael Grundy on the show as well. He mentioned Calvert-Lewin, and specifically his goal against the start of the season, first game of the season, got the wheels in motion. Obviously, great header, we've seen him do it. Obviously, Liverpool as well in the derby, what a header that was. You know, Calvert-Lewin's progression has been absolutely tremendous. And I think, you know, the highlights, there's numerous highlights I could pick out personally, but, you know, I think seeing us off the pitch now, you know, as you say, when Hammers was announced and going around the world, you know, announcing it around the world, it was just, you know, it's different level, and we've not seen that before. And making a name for ourselves on the pitch and off the pitch, which is you go hand in hand, is important. But probably a highlight which maybe others might not think about is probably how the club have put themselves yet again out there in a time of need. You know, Everton in the community, absolutely spectacular over the course of the pandemic. They continue to do great work. I think seeing what they do, what they mean to the community, and what work they put in, I think that sticks out to me. You know, I think with the way this year has gone, and football's certainly taken a backseat, you could argue. You know, we know obviously people's health is more important than what happens on a football pitch, but seeing the club leading the way and supporting the local community with what they've done has been absolutely superb for me. And it gives you a sense of pride, that's for sure. You know, we're doing things now the right way on the pitch. We've always done them the right way off the pitch, and that's great to see. So,
Totally agree. I mean, as we want to grow globally, it's still important that we retain that identity with the club as well. For me, yeah, I mean, the club are, you know, one of, if not the best, in terms of doing the community work. And, you know, let's hope they still carry that on as we hopefully, you know, grow and, you know, hopefully have a team worthy of Champions League football by the time we get to Bramley Moor.
I'd also like to bring up something on a lighter note. I think another highlight of this year was Tom and Dom in New York when they went that fashion parade. I think a lot of Everton Dars lost their minds that day. And I think it was another peak moment of Twitter for the Everton Twitter for this year. It was something to behold. It was February, actually.
Yeah, check your dates because Pete's on the
I've just checked that the rig-outs they were wearing was, you know, Tom in his overalls and Tom in that lovely purple number was February.
Pete's got some of those in his closet, definitely. Don't worry about it. He's got some hype, he's got some platforms and some flares.
Purple winkle pickers.
You're right, though. You're right. You know, there's definitely been some lighter moments of this year as well. You know, and that was certainly one of them.
It's
I love that. Sidibe, yeah. Sidibe in his shin pad. We said before, it will be in his plane. Another highlight. You know, these are the things which make the Everton fan base what it is, I think. You know, they certainly are. They certainly are. But, you know, it's important to pick out the more lighter moments and more enjoyable moments as well from what's been a difficult year. Well, from our side, we want to thank everyone for obviously listening over the course of the last 12 months. Thank you to all our guests, Andy, obviously yourself included. You're on more than Lee, which we always say isn't too difficult. Mind you, he hasn't been able to travel properly this year, so that's why he's probably attended a little bit more than he used to.
Skiing and golf.
Yeah, you know what he's like. He likes to get around, doesn't he?
First world problems.
Well, I guess you've been on. You know, it's what makes the show what it is. Having different voices most weeks, which we really appreciate. Thanks also to the local businesses you've got on board in recent months at a difficult time. Fan Hub, we've recently got on board for putting a bit of trust in us as well. Going forward, we look forward to seeing how that partnership develops. Flatback 4, great to have them on board as well. Don't forget to check them out and get some nice clothes in for when we can get back into the grounds, hopefully over the next few months once again. But that's the end of this week's show. We hope everyone has a safe and happy New Year's Eve and New Year. Let's hope it's a better one off the pitch for everyone. Make sure you stay healthy, look after yourselves, and we will catch you next week.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.